Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Today we celebrate the birthday of Swami Satchidananda, and this is the way that he would begin any talk that he gave. That I would read from today's posting. On November 11th, the armistice for World War I was signed at 11 o'clock, 11:11 at 11 in 1918. This ended the fighting and what was billed as the war to end all wars. We now know the fallacy of that hope. From the time Grog hit his neighbor over the head for an extra portion of mammoth, there has been conflict and violence amongst mankind. It is a sad commentary on human development and an enormous waste of lives and materials that could have been used to improve the lot of all. Instead, violence has been used in one way or another to beat each other over the head for much of our recorded history. When we look at the earth, there is enough, more than enough food and materials for prosperity for all, including leaving vast tracts of nature intact as natural habitats when all is intelligently used. This last year, we drove around this North American continent, and there were long miles of territory that was just as nature made it, excluding the road we were driving on. With a dedication by all for clean air and water, to treat nature as our essential partner and not just a product, we can have a very nice lifestyle and a healthy environment that will satisfy our Creator that we have been wise in our use of His gifts. A very positive thing today is that the casualties of war have dropped. Measuring by this past decade and comparing it to the Cold War era, the number of deaths from war is now 3 times lower, and by World War II numbers, it is 100 times lower, that with a much larger population today. Each life is precious and is a child of God. So one is too many to lose to senseless violence. In addition to the violence of war, there continues to be slavery, violence in homes and on streets, and a lack of justice for many in this wide world. However, even with these problems that affect our dear brothers and sisters in humanity, we may also take joy that the war casualties are so reduced. From Buddha and Jesus, we have the examples of love and compassion as a hallmark of their lives and teachings. Looking at the world through their eyes, we see all humanity, nay, all creation, as intimately connected with our own. Their welfare is not separate from ours. Papa Ramdas embodied this universal vision. Master and Mother gave the love of God to one and all. Surely the world has had teachings and examples enough for us to know what is right and wrong. Yet, human nature periodically wants to exert itself to dominate over its brothers and sisters, not lift them up. In the face of so much of what we see and hear of selfish disregard for others, what are we to think? What are we to do? The most basic teaching is one that can be understood by all. It is called the Golden Rule. Do unto others what you would have done to you. In other words, treat others exactly the way you want to be treated. There it is. A little thoughtfulness about what that means to each of us would make this world a heaven on earth. To start the ball rolling, you start by embodying this principle in your own life from this day out. To be kind, considerate, truthful, and compassionate. Sitting at the feet of one of India's greatest godmen, Swami Satchidananda, I was privileged to see and hear him offer his wisdom to those who came to him. In one instance, Swamiji was proactive in influencing an all-India situation that could have resulted in war. There was a movement urging Hindus to travel to Ayodhya, to tear down the mosque built on Hindu holy ground 500 years before. Even though there are those of Islam offering to move the mosque, these firebrands were determined to have a show of force. Swamiji offered to give the leader of this movement time to speak at the ashram. It was in Hindi, so I did not attend. Several of the ashram walked away from this talk, saying they could not understand his logic. After this man's talk, Swamiji met with him privately to reason with him that his actions would lead to violence, but to no avail. Tens of thousands boarded trains for Ayodhya, and a firebomb landed on a train car, killing over 40 people, a tragedy that lit a match in a tinderbox of sentiment. An incident Swamiji had tried to avoid. It reminded me of Krishna mediating between the Kurus and the Pandavas that would have avoided a tremendous war, and Ram, who sent emissaries to Ravana to negotiate a resolution that would have made the ensuing war unnecessary. Even though these incidents did not avoid conflict, they are examples for us to follow in working for our working for peace. Time and again, I witnessed Swami Satchidananda counsel loving action in the face of difficulties. If someone in the family was misbehaving, then to serve that one with love was the proffered advice. It was sometimes a different approach than I would have thought of at the time, but always consistent with loving compassion as the highest principle. Today, we celebrate Swamiji's birthday, and two themes of peace in the world, and Swamiji's life of dedicated service for finding peace within, peace in families, communities, and the world fit together perfectly. One must not think that Swamiji lived in some bubble, insulated from life's difficulties because he spent his years in an ashram. All the world's problems came through the gates of the ashram. He dealt with every sort of human trouble. In fact, in his early days at the ashram, he thought he should live in isolation because he could not serve at the ashram with perfect equanimity in the face of what he saw. God had other plans for him, however, and after a time in which he lived in a hut next to the Ganges, he was called back to Seva for Papa and would never leave again. Those of us who live in families with challenges, in workplaces that disturb our peace or are made uneasy by the world's situations can take a book, page, or even a whole book out of Swamiji's life and strive for compassionate peace in all situations. Although he was quiet, he was courageous in standing up for principle in the service of peace. Swamiji was definitely a titan member of the Golden Rule Club, and each one of us may add our part to solving war and conflicts through our working for peace within and peace without, even as he did beautifully throughout his life. What a great privilege it is to have been under the influence of two such highly realized souls as my guru and Swami Satchidananda. There are many things in this life that we can count as worthy, but none as being in the influence of a great master. And I'd like to read from Swami Satchidananda's book. And this is Memorable Days with Beloved Papa and Pujya Majiji. And he begins, "It is a great privilege to closely move with saints and more so to have occasions to serve them. Such occasions provide opportunities to witness the action of saints, which for them are spontaneous and ordinary. But such actions make indelible impressions in the minds of those who witness. Beloved Papa and Mataji, after having reached the supreme goal of a human being, i.e., the realization of their oneness with the Supreme Being and the entire manifested world, chose to make Anandashram a field for putting into action the universal love they both had experienced as a result of their universal vision. For them, doing anything for anybody was to serve God. For them, any situation, however apparently good or bad, was brought about by God only, as God is the only doer. Ordinary man, whose vision is not expanded into infinity, would be shaken when something very unpleasant happens. But the wider vision helps the saint to stand firm and unshaken, whatever happens. The most memorable event in my life was when I was sitting with Papa during my first visit to the ashram and explaining to him then my state of mind and my prayer that he should not push me back into the worldly life. Papa seriously thought for a few minutes and said very lovingly, "Ram Dass is thinking of keeping you here in the ashram, but the time has not yet come. You may go home now, and Ram Dass will call you when the time comes." This assured me of a place close to Papa and Mataji, and I was jubilant over it. The most important turning point in my life was when I was talking to Papa about my inability to maintain equanimity when engaged in activities, and therefore about my craving for a solitary life. Papa immediately understood my condition and suggested that I go to Rishikesh and adopt sannyas, stay alone, doing meditation. Next day, he himself got a couple of sets of clothes dyed in ochre along with a woolen shawl. The dyeing was done in the Udyogshala under his personal supervision. At the time of leaving, he gave me the clothes and shawl and said, "Have a clean shave, bathe in the Brahm Gund, and discarding the white clothes, put on the ochre robes. Take this oath of sannyas and find out a suitable place for stay and sadhana. You may assume the name Satchidananda or Anandamanta." Mataji was not happy when she heard from her papa that I was advised to leave for Rishikesh and adopt sannyas. She asked, "Why should I go anywhere, as according to her, serving guru is better than sadhana than any other?" Here the real mother's heart was revealed. As I was also inclined to go, and Papa supported it, Mataji reluctantly agreed. Traveling with Papa and Mataji in trains and cars was another experience. Papa was always jubilant in his moods and would crack jokes whenever possible. On the other hand, Mataji did not enjoy travel at all. Yet she saw to it that Papa was served as best as possible under the conditions prevailing during the train travel. She was the real mother, and Papa and myself were her two children. She did not limit the service to the two of us. Anybody else in the compartment also got the same treatment. The days of travels with Mataji and Papa are really unforgettable. Travel life was much different from the routine life in ashram. Different places, different faces, and different programs. From early morning, devotees would be visiting Papa, who would greet them with great joy and would spend some time with everyone, talking about various matters. Papa used to be in an ecstatic state always, and during the talks with devotees, there used to be a lot of fun and laughter. Papa was not concerned with anything else, as Mataji managed everything, and myself assisting her. Needless to say, those were unforgettable moments. Even after remaining with Papa for 1 or 2 hours, the devotees were not in a mood to leave. Mataji then would come and stand near the door, facing Papa. Taking this as a signal for them to leave, devotees would leave one by one. Even in Papa's bedroom and the members of the family of the host and some close friends would sit near Papa's bed. Papa would cut jokes as would make them laugh and laugh. Sometimes they had to hold their bellies to control the laughter. During the tour, Papa and Mataji would usually stay in a house of devotees who would be in a position to make arrangements for other devotees to take part in the satsang programs in the same home and also outside somewhere. The devotees would start pouring in from early morning. Some of them would return home after spending a few minutes with Papa and Mataji. many would stay on. Mataji saw to it that each and every devotee present, there was a breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So the kitchen would be busy preparing food for the innumerable devotees coming to have Papa's darshan. With the satsang on one side and the feeding of many on the other side, the house would be like one having a large celebration. In the beginning, some of the hosts who had not seen such mass feedings at such short notice were nervous. But Mataji gave them courage, and they were also very happy when Papa and Mataji made them instruments for such service to devotees. So, wherever Papa and Mataji went, a festive atmosphere was created, and it was all joy, a feast for the soul and a feast for the body. The most elevating experience when we were with saints is to see them meeting other saints. This happens rarely. I had the privilege of witnessing Papa and Mataji meeting various saints. Papa's humility, Papa's joy, and Papa's reverence for them cannot be explained in words. It has to be seen and enjoyed. They meet joyfully like children and converse with each other so lovingly and guilelessly that those blessed to witness the same are transported to higher realms of consciousness. These are special occasions we enjoy when we have had the privilege to live and move with saints. Such blessed moments cannot be had anywhere else. And Swamiji continues on. These are some responses either to questions or people's letters. And this one begins, Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Though it is not my nature to give lectures or discourses, it became necessary to address friends who gather on special occasions like the Jayante and Mahasamadhi days of beloved Param Pujya Papa and Param Pujya Mataji. It is also necessary daily to reply to quite a few letters from friends seeking advice on certain complicated matters which they consider serious. In most cases, they were mundane, while in some cases they related to sadhana. This book is a collection of the synopsis of short talks referred to above and extracts from the replies to various letters. It will be observed that most of the problems of an individual arise because of a disturbed state of mind. A mind in turmoil finds it difficult to face the battle of life successfully, and is so much agitated that it reaches an almost state of frustration. A calm and a cool mind alone can think properly and arrive at the right decisions. So, the solution is to make the mind calm. The way suggested for the same and repeated in my replies is to take the chanting of God's name. Only when human efforts fail and force us to succumb to the trying conditions, we realize that we should not depend upon mundane things for real and everlasting happiness, but should invoke divine intervention by catching hold of the Lord's feet. To get at His lotus feet and hold on to them, the easiest way is to chant His holy and all-powerful name as much as possible, with all love and devotion, and with a prayer coming from the bottom of the heart to intervene in the matter and save us from the perilous predicament. Sincere prayers are sure to be answered. This practice will give us the experience that communing with God as often as possible and ultimately without break is the only way to live peacefully and happily, making life flow smoothly, carrying God with us always, or rather to be conscious of God's eternal presence. Total dependence upon God will free us completely from the worldly worries and anxieties and ultimately lead to a state where everything is divine. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And Swamiji answers, no difference between mundane and spiritual life. We will not see any difference between mundane duties and spiritual practices if we train our mind to see everything as God. God in everything and everything in God with the result that our activities become worship to God. This practice must go on without break, and it will keep us always on the higher plane of consciousness. All are He only. The seen and the unseen are both God and God alone, and there is nothing else but God. It is He alone who is holding inspiring satsang in one place, doing business in another, committing so-called crime elsewhere. The moment we see that it is He alone who is acting in these roles, we see nothing good or bad as we are transported to a higher plane of consciousness. Our effort must be to only stay in that plane constantly. God has given different capacities and talents to different individuals. Therefore, some are intelligent, some moderate, and some below normal. We should be happy with whatever God has given us and should try to make the best of it. After all, it is God Himself. It is God Himself who is playing this world lila, putting on different garbs to fulfill His will. When you see others more talented than you, be happy that God is playing that part through them. Wherein would be the jealousy then, huh? And another, the world is exactly as it should be. Nothing in the world will disturb us if we take it that the Lord Himself in His innumerable forms plays the lila eternally. Unless we raise ourselves to a higher plane of consciousness from where we can visualize everything clearly, it is difficult to solve our problems in the world. We cannot change what is happening in the world, but we can change our attitude towards the happenings by looking upon them as the play of the Lord. As beloved Papa has written in one of his books, the world is exactly as it should be. There's an additional story to that, that when Swamiji read that in one of the Vision magazines, and had, this is before meeting Papa, it was his first exposure to Papa's teachings, and his first thought when he read that, the world is exactly as it should be, he thought he would take a very great soul to be able to say that, because that was definitely not the way that he was experiencing it at the time. He went through a depression. He considered taking his own life. And so he had had a difficult spiritual crisis to pass through. But it was all done in order to prepare him to come to the feet of Papa. Swamiji continues, if we should take such a detached view, we can remain happy in all conditions and circumstances and also enjoy the world game. Wherever He chooses to place us and whatever part He wills us to play. When we take this view, there is nothing spiritual or non-spiritual. Everything is He. Have always a loving attitude. It is possible, though it may be difficult, to change the attitudes of another by your own effort, by loving them wholeheartedly, in spite of all the insults He hurls on you. Be calm and serene, and talk to Him lovingly. Running away from the situation is not the solution. We must face it and conquer it. Love is the way. So that gives you a sense, a feeling for Swamiji's state of mind, advice that he gives to others. He was not somebody to put himself forward. When Papa was living in the body, he was happy to be in the background. And when Mataji was living still, he was continued to be happy to be in the background, carrying people's suitcases, doing any what we might call mundane activities. You know, running a ashram is really running a hotel with a restaurant service. All the worldly things have to go on, and yet you engender and cultivate a spiritual feeling, attitude, and vibration at the ashram where you are at. If you lose that, then you have lost the purpose for which the ashram came into being. And yet, Everything of a worldly nature needs to continue on. On Mother's birthday, which is also Christmas Day, I had seen another person beforehand give out some rupee notes to all the workers on their payday in commemoration or in thankfulness for one thing or another. And I thought, well, what more am I thankful for than having Mother in my life? And so I was at the ashram, and I asked about being able to make a donation to all the workers and give them some rupee notes. And I was told there's over 100 workers there at the ashram who are all paid and helping to keep the things run smoothly. And it was, in handing out these rupee notes, it was a wonderful experience. And I would give it out in Mother's name, and they all seemed to be happy to be getting supplemental to their regular income. But I asked Swamiji one day, who is the manager of all these people? It wasn't clear to me that there is a hierarchy. And he said, well, no one. Everybody just knows what to do. And I think there is a lot of truth, although there are times when I saw him speak rather sternly to some of the different workers, and although he was speaking in Malayalam, I think that he was giving them a little bit of what for and setting them straight. So everybody knew who the boss was. But he was happy, as long as everything was running smoothly, to let things go according to their own nature. He is a wonderful, wonderful soul. And I was the great beneficiary of his God consciousness. When Mother spoke, it was so powerful. It was like standing in a windstorm. When Swamiji spoke, he spoke in a soft voice. It was not emphatic. And yet, it had that same power to lift you up, to transform consciousness into higher consciousness. This is the power that a realized being has in our lives. And it cannot be duplicated. It can sometimes be seen in glimpses through a book, or by hearing another person's recording, perhaps. And we feel that upliftment and transformation. But there is something about their living presence that gives us something more, something transformative. And it doesn't even need to come through words. I remember one time Papa was telling Mother that a saint may transmit his divine Shakti or power through sight, through thought, through touch. And I thought through Mother, she added a fourth, and that is through her spoken word, because it was so powerful. But just to be in the presence, that is what satsang means, to have the vision, to see a realized soul, to associate with the high truth in which they exist constantly. Words are unnecessary, because just the vibration of that one, just the consciousness of that individual, is uplifting when we tune into it. Now there can be many who would be in the precincts of a great realized master and know nothing, not feel that upliftment. Why is this so? It is because they are not attuned to it. If you have a radio and you tune that in, you'll get a lot of static at times as you're turning the dial. Then all of a sudden, you'll get a weak station, and then a very powerful station. Being with a God-realized master is like turning your dial to a very powerful station, and you feel the full impact of it. You feel the full transformation. It's not just a thing of your mind, although that's affected, but oftentimes the mind is affected in a way that is not in a university class or a different kind of classroom where the intellect is being stimulated. The mind is actually set aside. And there's a transmission of power and grace that goes right past the mind. One time somebody asked Mother something she had mentioned that day, and they wanted to get it specifically, and Mother would say, how would I know? I was in an uplifted state. And it was God who was speaking through me. And for many of us, listening to Mother, we might not even be able to tell you very much what she had spoken about afterwards. But we would know the uplifting power that we felt when we were in her presence. We felt the vibration and the power of the words coming through us, as if it was changing us down on the very cellular level of our bodies, in our minds, in our hearts. We felt that upliftment and that transformation, and that's the most powerful communication that can be had. To feel that purity, to feel that upliftment, to feel that power is everything. The intellectual concepts will come in their own time. And of course, it registers in the mind, and when it's given in this powerful kind of a way, it's deeply registered in the subconscious mind. And it is sometimes months or years, and suddenly something that Mother had said will cycle back through, and you'll suddenly see the wisdom of it, the perfection of it. There were many things that Mother spoke of when I first met her that I didn't know about. Sometimes I wondered whether they were true or not. But I just simply set all of that aside. None of that bothered me at all. Because what did I know? And what could I discern that great truth with? So I would set it aside. And then at some later point, it would recycle back through. And God would confirm what she had said. The truth of it. The reality of it. Some insight or understanding of what she meant by that. And so this is our job as devotees. It is to take the truth that we have been taught. It is take the gifts that we have been given and make the most of it. There are those who come to a God-realized soul and they get some charge, they get some upliftment. And then some test, some challenge comes along and off they go as if nothing was given to them at all, as if they did not have a part to play. This life, this spiritual life that we lead, it will challenge us to the depths of our beings. When I was at the ashram the first time, I grew very ill. I had a very high fever, and it lasted for about a week. And I just stayed in my room because, one, I didn't want to give it to anybody else, and two, I was too weak to be able to go anywhere else. After a couple of days, Swamiji sent somebody to my room to find out if there was something the matter. They saw my condition, and a little while later, they brought back some little white pills from Swamiji. He would dispense these little white pills on occasion when people asked for them or when they were needed. He even developed some medications for the cows that were there. They were homeopathic, and it was very charming to see Swamiji standing out on the steps in front of his office, and there would be a calf that would be led up to him, and he used this crystal, wave it over to get yes and no answers to his questions, and he'd be holding it over this calf's head, and he'd be getting a yes or he'd be getting a no, and then he would dispense some little white pills for the calf as well. I think they probably mixed it in with the food. And so he sent these little white pills, and I gradually got better, and I think that the pills helped. But to receive the attention of a realized soul is such a blessing. I did not go to Anandashram for that initially. I went to India. I wanted to see the holy sites there where Master had been raised at 4 Gupar Road. Ramakrishna had taught at Dakshineshwar, where Sri Yukteswar had been in Puri and Sarampur, up to Babaji's cave and so on. All of these different holy places. And they were wonderful to be, but by 2 months' end, I was very exhausted from all the travel. And I just wanted to come to the ashram, and I didn't know for how long. It turned out to be for about another 4 months. And so I stayed, and I came there with the intent that I wanted to chant God's name. I wanted to do my kriya. I wanted to meditate. I wanted to go deeper. I wanted to soar higher. And what I got that I did not expect was Swamiji, because he was and is such a tremendous soul in God. And so I started to imbibe from his presence. I started to learn from his teachings. There were some things in my sadhana that had gotten stuck, and he helped to unlodge them. He gave me the highest criteria to measure myself by. He said that sahaja samadhi means that keeping your mind on God is effortless. He said at that time that he had not achieved that state of consciousness where it was always effortless, that there he still needed to exert control at times. And now I understand more the difference between that effortless state and when you need to self-correct and keep your mind upon God. And so he added to my understanding, but most of all, his consciousness, who he is in God, was uplifting me. And he seemed to take a special interest in me. I decided that I would go to Papa's cave, where he had written In Quest of God. It was in a nearby town of Mangalore on the outside precincts. The cave is near an ashram that's there that's not connected to Anandashram. And so I was telling him that I thought I would go there and I would meditate and chant God's name. And he gave me this beautiful wool rug, this ochre in color, and sent his blessings with me. And so I spent some days there, chanting God's name and meditating upon him deep in the recesses of that cave. A funny little incident happened while I was there. It was the middle of the night, very, very dark, and I was sitting at the mouth of the cave meditating, and suddenly I felt this movement around me. As I say, it was completely pitch dark, so I turned on my torch, which they call flashlights. There are torches. So I turned on the torch, and there was a whole herd of frogs, tiny little frogs, making their way from outside to the inner recesses of the cave. And one of them jumped up and hit me right in the chest and bounced back off. And they all, the rest, made their way around me. So I was in their migratory pattern, I guess. I didn't know it at the time. But I sat there and I was chanting God's name and feeling Papa and thinking on him and feeling the tremendous uplift there. And there with Swamiji's blessings. And so my sadhana continued. There were times when I would go up on the hillside, Manjapati behind the ashram, especially on full moon nights or when it was near full moon. And I'd sit up there and I'd chant all night long. One night I was up there, there was a new tune that they were singing at Anandashram, and I couldn't think of what it was. And it was driving me mad, thinking of what was that new tune. I liked it very much. It was about 3 a.m., and suddenly, somewhere out in the valley there, one of the temples started playing that exact tune of Ramnam. And I thought, oh God, how kind you are. Perhaps not to the neighbors who are having to listen to this loudspeaker system at 3 a.m., but they're used to that in India, I think, because you never know when these things will be turned on full blast. But out it rang through the valley, and it made me very happy because then I could continue on with that new tune. You see, God is present with you always. In our minds, we feel ourselves to be separate, different from God. But this is simply not the truth. And in the beginning, we can cultivate a mental attitude. I and my Father are one. God is in me. When I lift my arm, that life energy that allows me to lift my arm, that is God. When I speak, it is the power of God who is coming through my voice. When I think, it is his thoughts coming through my mind. You see, constantly, we are linking every experience that we have back to God. When we meet somebody or we're in a certain situation, God created that situation. It is God who has come to us in that human form. And you see, that way we don't get involved in the drama. Oh, they shouldn't be like this. They should be more like that. The constant commentary that's going on in our minds. We give it all up to God. We cultivate it. And then gradually, as the mind gets purified, we get little snippets where we actually feel this is God. This is God who's come to me in human form. This situation, it is God. It's perfectly orchestrated. And it is God who's acting all the different parts here. And I am unafraid. It is one of the great virtues of getting into a realized state is that fear and anxiety begin to drop off. And if they do come to you, they play upon the surface. They don't touch you deeply. It is said that when Papa was expecting somebody coming to the ashram, he would stand up and he would pace back and forth waiting for them if they were a little bit late until they finally got there. He is anxious for them to be there, anxious for them to be all right. Mother told a funny story of when her daughter, who was going to have a baby back in the United States, and Mother was there at the ashram. And they were waiting to hear a word. And, of course, this was long before there was internet or that there was even a telephone service. And so they were waiting for the telegram. And one day she got notice from one of the workers there that Papa had the telegram in hand and that she should come. And when she got there, Papa said, "It's a boy, it's a boy." Ram Dass couldn't wait. He had to open the telegram first. He was like a little child that way, you see. So loving, so curious. We think sometimes that if we become God realized, we'll become a non-entity. But let us look at the lives of Master, of Mother, of Papa. Are these non-entities? These are the greatest personalities this world has ever seen. These are wonderful personalities. They have wonderful sense of humors. Love. Compassion. They're concerned about the world, about the devotees, the people who are around them. They are real living human beings. And yet their lives have been changed, fundamentally changed. They no longer feel themselves to be separate from their Creator, but they are one with God. And in that oneness, they feel His bliss. They feel His joy. They feel their communion in Him, night and day, night and day. Papa didn't stay up all night after his sadhana days, sleeplessly. In fact, it was seen that he got enough sleep because he had different health difficulties. He had diabetes and other things. And so it was felt that he should get his sleep at night. So I think generally around 10 o'clock he went to sleep. Around 6 o'clock, he got up. Now, there may be times in your sadhana when you feel an intensity and you don't sleep. You keep up through the night or most of the night. And then other times when you sleep more normally. But you do as God directs you to do. You do as you feel God is awakening inside of you to do. We should not grow complacent, however. Because that is a tendency of the tamasic mind. It wants to settle into a pattern. Are you growing in God? Is your circle of love growing every day? Do you feel more bliss, more peace, more joy? If you do not, then you are fooling yourself. You need to dig deeper in order to soar higher. You need to turn it all over to God. And feel that He is the doer, and you are the instrument. You are the machine, and He is the operator. And then let Him strive to know Himself through you. He has the intelligence. He has the drive. He has the power. He has the everything that is required in order for you to know Him. Become His willing instrument. Swamiji worked from early morning until late at night. He would be up at 3 a.m. and then he would go until nighttime. One time, Carla and I were leaving due to the train. We were leaving at 2 a.m. We were getting ourselves ready to go. And Lakshmi and Mansi were up and they delivered all of this food, an unbelievable amount of food, to take with us on the train. And this is all at 2 a.m. And this is, everybody had been working hard the day before and would be working hard the next day. And they said, Swamiji's waiting for you. And I said, what? Yes, he's out on the porch. It's 2 a.m. Our taxi had come and we drove up there and there was Swamiji. There was Swami Muktananda, Anantraman, all standing there, all just to say goodbye to us. So loving, so wonderful. How can you explain such grace? Such grace come into your life. So let us think on these things. Let us seriously go to work on ourselves. Let us use Swami Satchidananda, even in his high state of realization, I am not there yet. He held such high standards for himself. You see, some people have one or two experiences and they think they have it all. Then they write books and everything. And yet they have just set their feet upon the path. They're just really starting out. And they think because one or two things happen, they have it all. Let us use the highest, purest criteria to know that God has become us and we are in Him always. This is our goal. And let us every day assess our lives. Am I making progress? Have I gone further, higher, more joy, more bliss, more God? Or am I just simply treading water? Or maybe I'm even starting to drown and I don't even realize it yet. Drown in the ocean of delusion. So this is our task. This is our test. Let us use Swamiji as an inspiration. An inspiration for everything that is to come. Because he is one of the greatest. One of the purest. There's a visiting Swami who is at the ashram. He's very well known for all of his books. He had a large number of European devotees who were there. And when we were walking off, Swamiji and this other Swami were walking together. And Swami Satchidananda split off to go to his place, and the other Swami split off. And all the other people followed after the other Swami because, you know, he's new in town. Everybody's excited about that. Some had come to see him mostly. And I went with Swami Satchidananda. I knew that he had more realization in his little finger than this other guru had in all of his whole being. Nothing against the other fellow. It's just Swamiji was that much greater. So it's not always the one who is at the head of the room. Sometimes somebody sitting at the back of the room is the one who is most closely in tune with God. But you can tell, you know. There are certain signs. There's a glow in the face. There's a sparkle in the eyes. There's a glow all in the aura of the person around them. There's a certain peace and joy that you feel with them. A groundedness in God. So let us honor Swami Satchidananda on this, his birthday anniversary. Let us closely attune ourselves with him. And you will know such peace, such bliss. And you will be a worker in this world to bring about the most perfect conditions. We may not see it all in this lifetime, you know. We have a long ways to go as a world. It doesn't deny the possibility that things can change on a dime. But it takes some dedicated souls to make that change happen. And we can be part of that vanguard, part of the harbingers who bring about the Christ manifest and incarnated in this world, not in one single human body, but in all human bodies, and know the full realization of what it is that the kingdom of heaven should be found here on earth. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Ram. Pranams, I bow to all of you, to the great God that is in each one of us. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Ram.